Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till three, Danny and Dusty on the fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till three,
an Odyssey station.
Hour number three on Tuesday on Danny and Dusty. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan, or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan, we appreciate you. We love you. And we want to show you some love. Want to go see Def Leppard?
Hell yeah.
Maybe some Journey?
Yes.
Well, text in right now, 503-864-6FAN, the word Def. It's three letters, D-E-F, not tone deaf, but Def, yep. Like Leppard. Again, 503-864-6326 to enter to win tickets to Journey, that's right, Journey, and Def Leppard, September 2nd at Moda Center.
Hey, don't stop believing if you don't win today.
We're doing it all week long.
Yeah.
Visit 1080thefan.com for complete contest details.
Heck yeah.
All right, well, Clemson? Clemsoning? Clemsoning? No, not really Clemsoning. They're going on the offensive. Whoa. Speaking of Clemsoning.
Getting ahead of myself.
There you go. Clemson's going on the offensive, working in the shadows, not like Florida State, where they have thumbed their nose at everything everywhere along the lines. Clemson hired the big pricey lawyers and said, find me a loophole. Well, and it appears they have.
Clemson is suing the ACC to try and get out because of the grant of rights deal.
Yes.
And make no mistake about when they did it this morning, because ESPN, just hours after Clemson filed their lawsuit in South Carolina court, and this is the part that's been brutal for Florida State, is that the ACC preemptively sued Florida State on home court, mm-hmm, in a more favorable jurisdiction.
Yes.
And because Florida State's trying to do the same thing. They're suing the ACC for an attempt to get out without paying the $140 million exit fee for their grant of rights deal. That, spoiler alert, both Clemson and Florida State signed and agreed to the grant of rights deal, which is excessive and far more punitive than any other conference in college sports. They all signed it because they wanted the ACC to stick together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Clemson does this hours before ESPN announces they have agreed to a $7.8 billion deal to be the carrier of the college football playoff
through 2031.
And so that's over $1.3 billion per year that they're going to be ponying up for the college football playoff. And one of the reasons why Clemson's filing this now is because you get it in the courts before everything comes out, because one of their big sticking points that they're going to argue is that what the ACC is doing is restricting the earning power of their university and putting them behind the eight ball because of this new television deal. The new television deal, it gives over $20 million per year per school to the SEC and the Big Ten. Meanwhile, the ACC is going to be dishing out about $13 million a pop.
Which is significantly less, or 33%.
And so you start getting lapped by the competition here. And so they wanted to sneak this one in to a South Carolina court, which they did. And now they're going to say, look, it's unfair what we're doing or what the ACC is doing to us. The language within our grant of rights deal is not commiserate with what you see across college football with exit fees, and also within the same conference, because if you want to say the ACC wants to say it's because of the football deals,
yes,
Notre Dame,
this is the trump card,
has got their own television deal for football, yet is a member institution for every other sport in the ACC.
This is the smoking gun that the lawyers found, and they said, aha, this is what we can work with. Chris Vanini has the outline of the lawsuit, and Clemson's lawsuit argues that the ACC withdrawal fee doesn't represent actual damages. And the reason that is exactly what you just said, because Notre Dame has the same fee despite having a football deal separate from the ACC. So it's basically the ACC saying, we're going to have it both ways, which in legal standing is challengeable. And that's what they're looking at it. Now, whether it's winnable, who knows?
Because they signed an agreement. Their universities signed that agreement along with every other member institution saying that this is what we're going to do.
I have a reeling suspicion that, Clemson is going to win.
Big Ten's withdrawal penalty, $0. The Big 12's withdrawal penalty, an amount equal to revenues distributed to the departing member for the final 2 years of its membership in the conference. So that'd be like, if you want to get out of the Big 12 now, you have to pay $26 million. It's because if you get $13 million, you know, over 2 years. For the SEC, it's $30 million if 2 years notice is provided, $40 million if less than 2 years notice is provided, $45 million if no notice is provided.
Meanwhile,
that is $100 million more.
The ACC than is the at 140.4.
So this is where they're arguing. But the other problem that Clemson and Florida State have is that, so if they want to argue, you know, hey, we signed this deal, we know that, but just look at all these other facts. They're going to have every other institution in the ACC that wants to keep the conference together arguing against them as well. And so that's going to be another, that will be another major hurdle that Clemson has to, and Florida State both have to clear. But make no mistake about it, they are seeing what the SEC and the Big Ten are getting, and they know it's to the detriment of everybody else across the landscape of college sports.
And they're basically saying, we're going to be a part of that. And this is where I keep going, Vandy, get lost. Clemson, come on in.
But, like, and that's going to be what Vandy's going, this is our level playing field right now. Like, we can level the playing field with everybody else, even though that hasn't been the case, despite the fact there's still bottom feeders in the Big Ten and the SEC, even though they've been dominating the dojo financially for, you know, over a decade now.
Now, it's going to be an interesting position to come out of this. The NCAA is getting their butt kicked up and down.
Oof.
I have a reeling suspicion that Clemson is probably going to take the first step here and open things up one way or the other.
Yep.
Now, speaking of South Carolina, South Carolina and the Ducks will face off in the first round of the NCAA tournament. We've got Jack Veltri of Gamecock Central with On3 Sports coming up next to discuss the matchup here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch
watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field. It's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Ahead of South Carolina, Oregon, we now welcome in Jack Veltri from Gamecock Central with On3 Sports. Jack, thanks for taking some time for us, man.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me on. Really appreciate it. Always happy to talk sports.
Hey, how long is the drive from South Carolina, from Columbia, South Carolina, to Pittsburgh?
So, my coworker and I, Mike Yuva, we're driving, and we are currently in West Virginia. It's about 8 hours, so we're at the halfway point right now.
That's not a bad drive.
That's from here to Sacramento?
Not a bad drive at all.
Doable. Yeah. I wonder if anyone's making the drive out from Eugene to Pittsburgh for this. But
I'm going to tell you, absolutely not. Nobody is making that drive
there's one lunatic.
You had to start Sunday and just start driving. The bracket was revealed, and they just started
where are we going?
To Pittsburgh, baby.
All right, Jack, for people that haven't watched South Carolina play, because this is the first meeting between Oregon and South Carolina, so I imagine a lot of Pac-12 folks haven't seen South Carolina. What is this team kind of built on?
Yeah, this is a team that likes to play at their own pace. Stay at a good pace early, you know, build the lead or stay in the game, they take a lot of time off the clock, make a lot of passes, try to look for the right shot. And, you know, this is a team that, you know, doesn't score in high volume typically, but at the same time, you know, they're able to hit their threes and make big plays in the paint. I think they're an all-around good team that finds more than one way to, get points on the board.
You know, led by two guards, Talon Cooper and Michi Johnson, both all SEC selections this year. You know, having guard play is going to be huge, especially when you're going against, you know, a young freshman point guard like Jackson Shellstead in the University of Oregon. How dependent are they on the rhythm of those two guys and the success throughout the course of the game?
So, you know, it's kind of interesting you bring that up because, honestly, lately, like, Michi Johnson has been struggling kind of. He's had a few games where he's been really good. But, like, you know, it's nothing compared to the start he got off to this year. And then Talon Cooper's always been pretty consistent. He's not going to score 30 points or anything, but, you know, he'll get you 10 to 15 points and hit some clutch threes and make some good plays on defense. They rely on them, but it's not like the end-all, be-all. I know guard play is so important in March Madness, but they also have Colin Murray-Boyles and B.J. Mack in the paint that, you know, can account for a good portion of their points. I mean, I think that's kind of how they won, the Mississippi State game to end the regular season and then the Arkansas game to open the SEC tournament. So there's more ways to win for this team than their guard play, but obviously you'd like Michi Johnson or Talon Cooper – maybe even both those guys get going as we head into March Madness now.
When you look at this South Carolina team, stylistically, you talked about as far as working on the clock, they're also a team that doesn't hurt themselves, which in NCAA tournament play is maybe the biggest thing outside of having that guard play. When you look at this Oregon team, that the key to their success has been timely shot making, but there's just not a lot of room for error. Is that something when you look at this matchup that you look at South Carolina going, they're not a team that either turns the ball over, but they don't really force turnovers either. They just like to keep things steady. Is that kind of the key to this game, or do you see something different than that?
Yeah, so I think the key to this game, and I've been talking about it with my coworker Mike Yuva, is that, you know, Oregon's got a lot of size, and that's something that kind of hurt South Carolina a little bit in these matchups with Auburn specifically this year. That's kind of who we're reminded of when you look at this Oregon team. Whether or not Oregon's as physical as Auburn, I think that's kind of to be determined. I think Auburn's a really good team and is a good comp for Oregon, but I think South Carolina's defense makes such a big difference in these games, and you know, they play very sound defensively. They're gonna force you into some tough shots and such. But with, like you said, I mean, that's, that's how they play their brand of basketball. And so I think this game definitely comes down to whether or not South Carolina can defend well and play well in the paint. Because, I mean, you have a guy like Mafali Dante. I hope I'm saying that name right.
Yep.
He's just insane. And that matchup with Colin Murray Bowles, I said as soon as I watched 5 minutes of that Pac-12 championship game, I'm like, okay, that is the matchup that's going to determine who wins and who loses this game.
Yeah, shooting 85% from the field in the month of March, not bad for Nfali Dante. It's been a good run. And, you know, what has Lamont Paris meant to this program, though? I mean, and how surprising is it that year two, an NCAA appearance, a six seed, because 2017, the future looked so bright under Frank Martin, where it was a Final Four run, and it was Frank Martin just kind of being that gritty red ass on the bench. But the wheels fell off pretty quickly. Is it surprising that Lamont Paris has them where they're at right now?
I think if you asked any average Joe on the street before the season where South Carolina was going to finish at the end of the year, no one would have said tied for second in the SEC. I think you were more realistically looking at bottom of the barrel. Even in my opinion, I was thinking maybe like 10th in the SEC, maybe a little higher, but nothing beyond that. I think Lamont Paris has really blown away everyone's expectations, and he's the right guy for the job. I think there were a lot of people, unsure about him when South Carolina swung and missed on a lot of their potential hires after Frank Martin was canned, but I think he's got them going the right direction. He's a player's coach. The guys love him from everything I've heard. And, his coaching style works for this team with the way they play defense and what they can do on offense. I think it's a very balanced attack.
What's the thing that needs to spark South Carolina to make a deep tournament run?
Michi Johnson, easily. He needs to – look, South Carolina has enough to go around, enough talent to go around to make up for one guy not playing so well. And there's been games where Michi Johnson's been, 1-for-10 from the field. There was even a game earlier this year where he had 0 points and South Carolina still won no problem. So they can make up for, any deficiencies out there. However, to make a run in March, I mean, you think of big guys like Steph Curry and I'm trying to think of some other guys that have, led the way to big runs in March Madness. You need that prototypical scorer that's going to go out there and put up 20 to 25 points a game and, carry the way. It's not the end-all, be-all, but for South Carolina, I think in order to beat a team like Oregon and then maybe Creighton or Akron or whoever, Tennessee down the road, you got to be able to score with your big guns. And Michi Johnson, I mean, you want to make a name for yourself. I mean, this is there's no better place to do it. So I think he definitely will, especially with him being from Cleveland and stuff. I hear he's got a lot of family coming in town for this game. So I think he'll step up to the plate.
Miles Stute had a hit pointer in the SEC tournament, and he had a longer term injury earlier in the season. What's his status looking like for round one?
Yeah, we haven't heard anything yet on Miles Stute. That hit pointer injury, I think, came from the Arkansas game. He got, hit pretty hard, it would seem. And, he's been dealing with injuries throughout this entire season. I hate it for him just because, he's a transfer, making a name for himself, had a starting spot, and now it's kind of, coming off the bench and such. But, if he's available to go tomorrow, I think they're pretty much good on the injury front. Thursday. I think they're going to be fine on the injury front because also Talon Cooper was dealing with an ankle issue after the Auburn game. But, if you get Stute back, look at it this way. He comes off the bench, plays pretty good defense, has that veteran experience, and, can hit a few shots. So I think while he might not be at 100%, if you can get him anywhere close to above 75 to 80%, I think you're in a good position. And it only helps South Carolina.
All right, let's get to Jermaine Cousinard, former South Carolina Gamecock. And this is crazy that it's the first time in either football or basketball that Oregon and South Carolina have met up in any capacity, let alone the NCAA tournament. But Cousinard, former South Carolina Gamecock, is there any bad blood between the two? Because it was kind of a weird reaction when, you saw the six seed come up and it was South Carolina. And then when Oregon popped up, all of a sudden it was like a mixed emotion for Cousinard there.
Yeah, no, people like him here in Columbia. I was actually talking with Jacoby Wright the other day, who is a guard for South Carolina. So long story short, after Frank Martin got fired, a ton of players decided to transfer, and Jeremy Neal was one of them. But Jacoby Wright ended up staying along with Josh Gray, and they're the only two players left from the Frank Martin era at South Carolina. And talking with Jacoby, I mean, it seems like that, like they're still brothers to this day. They still text. I mean, Jacoby was texting Jermaine after the Pac-12 championship game, and you know, it was all good there. But I mean, they're not going to text now because you know they're about to play each other. But I think afterwards, it's all still love at the end of the day. And you know, look, I mean, Jermaine had to do what was best for him, and I understand it. You know, transferring after your coach gets fired, I mean, it's a tough situation. And you know, I mean, you wish he would have stayed, you know, under Lamont Paris and stuff, but look at what he's doing in Oregon. He's yep. continuing to thrive, and I know he didn't have a great Pac-12 tournament, but I think he's definitely going to be critical in what the Ducks can do moving forward here.
Hey, Jack, thanks for taking the time for us today, man. Have a safe drive, and enjoy the tournament.
Yeah, man. Always appreciate it, guys. Thank you for thinking of me and having me on.
Anytime. That's Jack Veltri of Gamecock Central for On3 Sports ahead of South Carolina-Oregon NCAA tournament on Thursday.
Lamont Paris in this South Carolina team, they are defensively, that's where they're going to want to make their...
You
make
look
their
at run. All of their profiles, they force one of the least amount of turnovers in all of basketball because they just play sound. They aren't aggressive. So when we talked about profiles, and when you're talking about matchups in the NCAA tournament, there's the hyper-aggressive Samfords who are going to 2-1-2 you to death. They're going to run lineup changes wholesale. They're just going to grind you into paste for 40 minutes. This South Carolina team, they are going to be nuanced and methodical. They are not going to take chances on offense. They are not going to take chances on defense. They are going to make you make mistakes.
I am excited for this matchup for that reason. It's not going to be the back and forth.
It's not going to be sexy.
Running gun.
It's going to be good basketball.
Sexy NCAA tournament game. Yeah. It's going to be kind of put you in a phone booth, mm-hmm. and we're going to see who comes out of it. And that is, I think that's where Oregon wants to play. I mean, they will push tempo. They're going to get up and down the floor. But we saw when they were at their best, and what we've heard from Dana Altman time and time again, is we're rushing our offense. Yep. Everything is too fast. And if you play a team that doesn't want to push you up and down the floor, it's a lot easier to kind of run your sets, get into where you want to be. That, to me, means that we're going to have
Styles makes five. Of
a matchup if, between these two teams.
If Oregon can execute and hit timely shots to where they're in it in the final 5 minutes, you should be in for a bit of a thriller.
I think we're going to hit the under.
I would bet it just because neither team, I mean, Oregon especially, not great shooting. But, again, South Carolina, the reason they are where they are, this was a... Look, they're a 6 seed, but you look at their profile, they're a really good 26-7. They were a really good team.
Yep. And the guy we talked about at the end, Jermaine Cousinard, he's going to play a massive role for Oregon in this matchup. Not because it's South Carolina, not because it's his former school. It is because of in the tournament, you need that. And he did. He had a bit of a rough go of it in the Pac-12 tournament. In the tournament, you need the veterans. It's, I mean, this is a guy who is a six-year senior. These are where those guys shine.
This is where it should show out.
And that is when you have a true freshman point guard in Shelstead, when you are inexperienced at other places, that guy pays dividends come tourney time. He's going to have to be huge.
I can't wait. Hercules.
A&A is going to be a fun place to be on
time.
Thursday, baby.
It's going to be a good time. I can tell you he's not having a good time.
Uh-oh.
Major League Baseball Players Association, can you have a mutiny in a union? Apparently you can. But first, here's the Big Kahuna Sports Center update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
Yeah, dang.
Now, there's a something a brewing in the Major League Baseball Players Association. Harmony not on the menu amongst the players.
They don't like the direction of their players' union. And this is a weird story, and baseball is weird in general. But apparently you had the player representatives hold a conference call with Tony Clark yesterday to fire their assistant executive director, basically the lawyer of the group mm-hmm. who does all the negotiating for them, and replace him with the guy who led the minor league labor agreements.
Which were big advancements.
Huge advancements, but basically what the players are saying, and they did, what happens is you have 23 player reps around the league, which is a weird thing that they don't have all 30 teams involved in it. But you have 23 player reps who go and they do a straw poll around their clubhouse and they say, hey, you in or you out? And it was split, but the majority did say, look, we don't like the way that our agreements are going because we feel that our executive or deputy executive director is kind of in the bag with Scott Boras.
Which,
and doesn't have our interests at play. He has ulterior motives behind mm-hmm. the decisions that are made at this level. Baseball's union has always been in the most disarray because of the fact that it's so big. Because you have guys that go up to the majors and they get sent back down to the minors. You have guys that are bouncing in between. You have so much movement of players from year to year that it is, they've never really been on the same page because you have minor leaguers fighting for minor league rights. You have the tweeners that are kind of lost in the shuffle, but they have the biggest voice because it's the strength in numbers thing, right? The numbers will tell you that more guys are bouncing up and down between the minors and the bigs than the guys who are the stars of Major League Baseball. And in basketball, smaller number of guys. In football, you have no minor league system.
Here's the issue, though. On the basketball side of things, you saw the pushback on this last deal. You're seeing more money go down because they made the mistake of Major League Baseball is trying to get away from right now, which is empowering those. Remember LeBron James, Chris Paul being at the top? All of a sudden, there were new rules and earning incentives for older players, removing the cap of 37-year-old players or up to 37-year-old players, and the supermaxes, the more consolidating the money at the top. Well, yeah. The president you just elected and your player reps that you're sending were all the best players in the league and not guys who were looking out for the benefits of the rest of the league, which is very similar to what you're seeing here in Major League Baseball because who does Scott Boras represent?
All of the big players in Major League Baseball.
And what has his free agency holdup done to all of the rest of free agency in baseball?
The trickle down for signing everybody else has been held up because teams want to
sign bigger players.
Have that money set aside. But the other issue that Major League Baseball has that is not Bruce Meyer's the guy that they want out. And they wanted this guy, Harry Marino, in, who's a former Major League Baseball or minor league baseball player who is only 33 years old, but a lawyer now. And he negotiated the minor league deal. And the apprehension is, dude, he's 33. He's going to get eaten alive by these Major League Baseball lawyers. Like, the MLB lawyers are not going to mess around with it. Yeah. Like, that's the pushback to it. But the guy who they have in charge now, Bruce Meyer, it is him and Scott Boras being in his ear is their problem that, hey, all they really care about is the big-name players. Mm-hmm. And we want the guy who represents the little man
because
to come in.
Because the little man makes up most of baseball.
The big problem that Major League Baseball has, though, and this has forever been the problem with Major League Baseball, is sure the big name players and maybe the holdup by Scott Boras of them getting signed, that's an issue. But there's also an issue with like seven teams that have only signed $15 million worth of free agents this year. Like, you had $1.3 billion in free agent signings between Yamamoto and Ohtani by the Dodgers. Outside of that, there's like $2 billion spent. So a majority of it was one team signing two players. Yeah. And then you have teams like the Colorado Rockies and the Oakland A's
and the Reds
that spent like $15 million in free agency. That isn't the big name player issue. That is, Major League Baseball's got a problem with cheap teams not spending money.
And I think what you get when you get the guy who negotiated the deal for the minor leagues raising the salary floor, they're probably going to argue for the salary. Because right now, there's a loose cap in baseball. It's $237 million. Hilariously, it's a lot of money. But there's no floor.
Yeah. You got to have a floor.
And that's the thing is, I think that's what they're going to push for here, is they're going to push for the floor.
The Oakland A's, Baltimore Orioles, Washington Nationals, Tampa Bay Rays, it's Minnesota so Twins, Miami Marlins, Cleveland Guardians, Colorado Rockies. Eight teams.
Colorado Rockies? Gross.
Spent less than $15 million in free agency this year. Now, Baltimore makes sense. They're loaded with young contracts in rosters.
Yeah.
So they've got a lot of young talent coming up. Tampa and Minnesota, they also make sense because Tampa isn't really a big spender overall, but they locked a majority of their players into place
last year
also, and the previous year.
When they spend, they do spend, then they tear back down and they spend again.
See Blake Snell.
Yes.
And that is where...
Which, if you're going to have it be one way, I'd rather have a team that is willing to spend in cycles and then tear down, as opposed to just being cheap all the time.
I think it's really interesting, though, what the players are really pushing back, though, in addition to the Boris connection there, is that they're thinking Myers did them dirty. I don't know how many people know the J.D. Davis story of what the Giants did to him.
Oh, buddy, this is nasty.
But I told you about this last week.
Yeah.
And it's a...
It's dirty.
It's a loophole that was not closed that the players really wanted closed in the arbitration process.
Going down this path is a nuclear path.
Which J.D. Davis won his arbitration hearing with the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And so he won a $6.2 million arbitration hearing. And what the Giants did was they did not negotiate in good faith. According to Davis's agent, what happened was, and this is what happens in arbitration, the player submits a what he feels his value is for a one-year deal. The team submits what they feel is a one-year deal. What happened was the J.D. Davis's representation was about a couple $100,000 off what the $6.2 million. I think they put in for 6.6, and he ended up winning at 6.2. The offer that the Giants had given J.D. Davis was significantly lower. It was, like, way low. They lowballed him. And then right before, about a half hour before the cutoff was for him to go to arbitration, the Giants submitted their offer, and then his representation didn't have a chance to counter.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was the Giants were like, fine, we'll go to arbitration. The number that they submitted to arbitration was way different than they gave the player, okay? And it was really close to what his $6.2 million was.
Mm-hmm.
So they won the arbitration hearing. Now, here's where Myers and the players' union are upset, is that they feel that the Giants did that negotiation in bad faith.
Yes.
Because they knew he was going to win his arbitration hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you win your arbitration hearing, it's not guaranteed.
Yes.
If they were to come to an agreement before arbitration, whatever that number was would be a guaranteed number.
Mm-hmm.
Because all contracts in Major League Baseball are guaranteed unless the player wins an arbitration. At that point, you have to pay one-fifth of the arbitration salary if you cut the guy. The Giants cut the guy last week. He ended up, so he got 1.2 of his $6.2 million. Mm-hmm. He ended up signing with the A's because they left him hanging. Like they left him out to dry because they signed Matt Chapman in the offseason.
Yes, and they knew they were going to do this.
That is where they're going, we wanted this loophole closed. You failed to do that. And that was one of our big sticking points in the previous CBA. And so it's a lot more than just Boris and, you know, being in the pocket of Scott Boras, a super agent, only looking out for the top 1% of major leaguers.
But that is an issue.
It is all the way down. In those arbitration hearings, they go from stars all the way down to the minions of Major League Baseball.
So it's going to be an interesting spot and a leverage point that's probably going to impact not just Major League Baseball, but other unions around the professional sporting world. So it's something worth keeping an eye on. All right, coming up next, we'll put a nice little bow on today's show before we hand you off to Isaac and Sue. Come up here next on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Cano Now the turnover for Utah. Edwards gets it back.
Sounds like he said from the rafters, but it's not. It's from the rafters.
He was from the rafters. And that was a good call because he didn't call it a dunk. He said he threw it down.
Yeah.
Which Ant Edwards
did throw it down.
Threw it down. Yeah. And John Collins, rest in peace.
Got stuffed in the, it's weird. You know, we've progressed pretty far as a society. I just didn't know we shoot snuff films on network TV.
Yeah, that was something. I just think Austin Reeves is thankful that John Collins got dunked on the way he did because it took a lot of heat off of him.
John Collins' Wikipedia page has been updated that he was killed last night.
He was. Yeah. You don't come back from that. Like, we should have a statistical analysis starting from March 18 to whenever John Collins' career ends because I don't think he's ever going to be the same player after that.
Well, Mozgov got killed by Blake Griffin, and that was kind of what happened there.
And it was all downhill from there.
To be fair, it was going downhill.
Remember, Timothy Mozgov was the future of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
He got that four-year, $40 million deal. But getting Mozgov became a verb.
And now it's getting Collins'd.
Ooh.
You want to get Roy Munson'd? No, nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah, what Munson? Getting Munson'd. You know, like up the river? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's old getting Munson there. Now we got getting Collins'd, which I don't know how many other people in the world are going to get Collins'd after that.
Getting John Collins sounds like getting a good drink.
Yeah. Well, what is Robert
Tom
De Niro?
Tom Collins.
Robert De Niro's favorite drink?
But getting John Collins.
Meet the Fockers.
I'm not going to say, John Collins sounds like a more refined drink.
Than a Tom Collins?
Yeah. Tom Collins sounds like it's from Alabama. John Collins sounds like it's from New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I'm there with that. Yeah, okay. Little Tom Collins. No. A drink from Alabama needs to have two first names. Like, that's the Billy Ray is an Alabama
drink.
Okay,
this is the Jim Bob.
Jim Bob Collins?
You know, Tom Collins is very, like, Maryland, like where you're creeping further towards the south. Maybe Virginia. Okay. Maybe Virginia.
Virginia.
Yeah.
Virginia, if you would.
Virginia.
What about Virginia?
All right. That'll do it for us. Tomorrow, we are back noon to 3. Up next, it's 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's prime time with Isaac and Suk. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Bye.
Yes!
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.TV. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.